Welcome to the Foothills Wellness Retreat podcast, where we discuss the next Foothills Wellness Retreat, interview presenters, and share with you wellness opportunities here in the Foothills community. I'm Dr. Jared McCollum, and our co-host is Lisa Moraz, the founder and director of the Foothills Wellness Retreat. Well, welcome everyone to the Foothills Wellness Retreat podcast. I'm Dr. Jared McCollum, and today my guest is Stephanie, and not Stephanie, I just want to remember your last name. I'm so sorry. I had it in my head and I just lost it.
That's okay. It's Wilton.
Wilton. Okay. There we go. Great. Now, Stephanie, she's the founder and creator of Embodiment Yoga Therapy. She's been teaching yoga for over 2 decades. And when I read this, it called to me. She holds a special place in her heart for the neurodivergent souls. She strives to provide a safe space where they feel welcome and honored for their strengths. And I love that. Myself, being a little on that spectrum, I have 3 sons with autism, so I understand that fully, and I appreciate words like that. Also, she teaches meditation, philosophy, adaptive yoga, vinyasa flow, yoga therapy, and Thai massage. So when do you have time to teach yoga? Learning all these things.
Oh, Jared, that's an amazing question. And to be honest, I wonder sometimes if I'm teaching what we've defined in the West to be yoga anymore at all. Mm-hmm. I am a neurodivergent individual myself as well. So I just want to speak to that because I found that so many of the people who I work with are themselves neurodivergent, or perhaps wondering if they're neurodivergent, or just highly sensitive. And it seems to be that my work has been centered on creating a safe space for people who often don't feel safe in other environments. So, again, coming back to the question, like, when do I fit all the yoga in? I actually have a pretty low schedule so that when I am doing things, I'm putting my heart into it and I'm able to give of myself fully and not be exhausted in the process. So I don't do it a lot. But as a therapist, I find where I spend most of my time is working with people one-on-one. And there is a lot between that and the group that's similar. I find that what often leads a session is where people are feeling uncomfortable. And I love to find ways to alleviate that discomfort. And often that means it could be, you know, just physical, like, where are you noticing physical discomfort? You know, often it's the shoulders and the low back or the hip flexors. And so how do we create a space that's going to allow your body to honor that discomfort and go into the tension and then let it melt. And so that means that the work that I do is pretty gentle. I bring all the things that I learned from my one-on-one sessions into the group environment and invite people to explore really small micro movements and functional movements, and then give opportunity to connect with music and express as well, because I find that that's a big part of it as well.
Oh, that's lovely. So could you share with us your wellness journey? What pulled you to yoga, and, you know, how did you discover that that was the vehicle you were going to use to help other people achieve wellness?
You know, I think it just builds on what I just said, honestly. Being neurodivergent, I found that a lot of environments for me are too loud, too busy, too chaotic, and then they create a situation where I'm less eloquent, less clear, and pretty flustered. And I think what I naturally stumbled into was that in doing with this low sensory quiet space where my needs were being met. And that felt really good because once my needs were met, I was able to have clarity. I didn't feel flustered or confused. I felt confident was able to access my words and what I wanted to communicate. I felt accomplished. And I just kept leaning into that because I think for myself, a lot of the things that were going on in my own body were related to feeling anxious and displaced. And once I started getting my needs met, I found that that anxiety started to subside and I experienced ease. And that's probably the most important word that I ever incorporate into, it's in everything that I do. For me, I found ease. I could breathe with ease. I could think with ease. I could communicate with others with ease. And that at one point in my life was a very novel and new changing. So, you know, how did I get into wellness? I found a space that allowed me to be myself and flourish and experience ease. So, of course, once I, you know, tapped into that, I wanted to share it with others.
Well, that's lovely. I really do think it's interesting to see, you know, that path of many practitioners, because it's almost as though, of course, there's those that go into health because there's the expectation of their family or whatever. But it seems like the majority, mm-hmm. especially in kind of the complementary and alternative therapies, people who, you know, found healing in their life and then took that tool that brought them balance and kind of melded it and adapted it to themselves. And then as they go out and share, you know, you're looking for those that share, you know, are walking a similar path that that mm-hmm. path calls to them to help them find that peace. And then I just love how we continually, then we take that and we adapt that for us as individuals. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, I'm not a purist with any therapy. You know, of course I practice acupuncture and Chinese medicine. It's thousands of years old, but I don't believe anything is meant to stay the same and stay stagnant. It should be something that should be mm-hmm. developed for how we are living our worlds today. You know, I don't think the yogis yeah. had any idea how chaotic and stressful and busy our lives would be today.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh. Yeah. You're walking right into something that I love to talk about.
Please, sure.
Because, you know, I agree with you 100%. Yoga is a dynamic, breathing, evolving human expression. And I think it's important to honor the teachers from India who brought it to everyone else's awareness and really defined what this is. And to be cautious not to appropriate and to always make sure we're honoring and giving credit when we share this work, especially for myself being a white human being, I need to be very cautious. And I'm also very aware that yoga is this dynamic, evolving thing. And one way that I found the way I share this work that's a little different is that if you think of yoga's origins being during a time where people are living in villages and it's, you know, quiet and the work is outdoors and it's with your hands and there's threats, of course, but it's not this rapid paced world that we're living in. And so yoga at that time would have been about moving your energy upward, right? Like about you're already fully in your body. You know, and so at this point, the practices are going to be more about the meditative, going into the higher realms of consciousness. And my response with how I've used yoga over the years is, you know, the reason I call it embodiment yoga therapy is because we live in a world where we are not embodied. Mm-hmm. We are in our heads. And I've witnessed occasions where certain types of meditation are actually counterintuitive or inappropriate for someone who's struggling with certain mental health issues because we don't need to get out of our heads more. We don't need to be more disembodied. We need to find ways to bring ourselves back into the body. And a lot of the ways that I do yoga and that I use it as a tool and invite it into what I'm offering is how do we move the energy downward? How do we re-inhabit and re-friend the body? How do we find spaces that are neutral? Because a lot of people going into the body is a painful thing, whether it's physically painful or emotionally painful. Asking someone to sit in something, it's a big ask. And so how do we find neutral spaces in the body that are accessible for you? And then how do we find spaces that have glimmers of hope, that have a flicker of positive feeling? How do we start to build all of that interoceptive awareness, the ability to feel and sense inside my body? And then how do we build that to develop an emotional vocabulary so that when I'm dysregulated, I can communicate that better and bring myself back into regulation, in a matter of time that's less painful. And by that, I mean when I was younger. If I was dysregulated, that was terrifying because, oh my goodness, how long is this going to last? Like, am I going to be off kilter for weeks on end, or where does it end? And what I found is, yoga being a practice, these are tools that we're stretching into and trying on and cultivating. Over time, I found that the biggest gift it's given me is that suffering time is shortened. So I might feel dysregulated. I might be pulled out of that ease. But having practiced that dance of going back and forth between discomfort and comfort, I can bring myself back a little more easily now. And maybe I'll have a wonky morning or bumpy evening, but I understand my body and I can communicate with it and say, okay, my breath is fast and I'm feeling tension in my abdomen and I'm going to go into this pose. I'm going to breathe this way. I'm going to slow down and so on. And I could go on and on and on, but you touched on something that's really dear to my heart here.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, I think it was probably about 10, 15 years ago, I was teaching meditation here in the community and I've been teaching it, for almost 20 years, but I remember one particular class where there's about 40 of us in there all meditating together. And at the end, there was one lady that I knew in the class near the back, and she's crying at the end of class. She's being supported by a couple of people, and I come over and talk to her. And the whole class is about, getting in the moment and staying in the moment. And she was very upset, and I was talking to her about it, and she goes, she had a hard time with meditation because she goes, what if that moment's really scary, or what if it's, and this is where I think a lot of people get confused because they spend so much time in their head time traveling. They're either in the future, in the past. So they think when things get quiet, that moment, they're not in their bodies. They're not in this moment. She was in her head in the past in a traumatic experience. And she spends so much time in that place and so much time trying to distract her mind from those traumas that, I think a lot of people today, they want a busy mind. They want to be distracted. Mm-hmm. They want the noise because they're afraid that if they sit still long enough, their mind will go back to that past. And when you don't have a practice that gets you in your body and in the moment, whether that's meditation, yoga, qigong, whatever, it's you can fall back into that time traveling and relive some of your traumatic moments. What techniques do you do to help people kind of ground in the moment and understand that there's, when you're in your head, that's not the moment, it's in your body.
Yeah. Oh, I love this question. it's like we had a conversation before the conversation and we didn't. So this is amazing. Okay. So this is really a conversation about trauma. And I'm of the belief that that everyone has trauma right now. We all are coming out of a time that, well, we're still in a time where there's a lot going on that's upsetting just on a grand scale. And when we are accustomed to keeping that noise, like you said, going and keeping things busy, 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 it is because we're scared that when we slow down, all those things that we haven't looked at that are painful are going to come bubbling up. And, you know, to be fair, they do, because that's part of the practice is in the sitting and allowing, we're clearing out those things that we've been holding that are stuck. So when I'm working with people, the most important tools that I can give, number one, we need to recognize dissociation. So when I'm in a meditative experience or doing yoga or any environment, you could be in a business meeting, when is that moment that I'm starting to disconnect from the present moment? What is it to be in the present moment in a safe way? And so some of the things that we can recognize, this is a really great example right now. Everyone's having online meetings and you're staring at screens. Pay attention to what's happening with your eyes. Because if your eyes are starting to defocus or, you know, get blurry and you're not really looking at the person in front of you any longer, you're starting to disconnect from the moment. When we're present in the moment, our eyes are focused, we are engaged, and we're actively connecting with our sense of sight, and we can see what's in front of us. So a tool to respond is to use any of your senses to bring yourself present moment. And I have meditations that I do with people just on this one thing. So open your eyes, look in the space. What do you see? And don't go into a story and be like, oh, I see a tree and it's there because my neighbor planted it. You know, just say tree. And what else do you see? Just keep connecting with your sight. Just name each object that you're seeing. Use your nose. What do you smell? Use your ears. What do you hear? And then you start leaning from these external sensory experiences where you're seeing, hearing, and smelling. And then you can start to move into some internal ones. So bring awareness to your feet. What do I notice that my feet are doing in this moment? Can I feel the floor and where it meets my foot? And if I can't, maybe stomp your feet, rub your feet, squeeze your feet. Can you make a connection with this is my foot, this is my body. I am here in this moment and I am feeling this thing. And you can progress that practice more and more and more by going into noticing other things that you feel. But connecting with the senses is one of the ways that we naturally pull ourselves into the present moment. And then the other thing that I like to do is more around resourcing. And I did a post on this on Instagram the other day. So if someone wants something that's more elaborate, you could go there, I suppose. But I gave a list of questions that we can ask ourselves. So, and these are things where we can make positive connections. So you can think of something that, say, a memory of a time when I accomplished something and it felt good. And it doesn't have to be grandiose. It could be you got all the laundry done and got it folded in, you got it put away. How does that feel to just lessen the chaos? You can connect as well with, is there something in nature that when I see it or smell it or touch it or hear it, that evokes a positive response in my body? So a lot of people have shared with me going to the beach, the feeling of the sunshine on my face, or the feeling of sand under my feet, the sound of the waves. And really let yourself go there. You know, some people are more visual, other people might prefer to draw something or journal about it, but really go there and think about what was that moment. And as you think about that, pay attention to what's happening in your body. So in that moment, do you feel a sense of relief? Do you notice something, anything? You know, just what do you notice happening in your body if that happens? And I've had some beautiful experiences myself, and I've observed and witnessed and had clients share. It feels like toothpaste being rolled out of my arms, and it's really good. It feels like a wave of relief rolling over me. I feel warmth spreading from my chest and down my arms. And what that is you're starting to strengthen that interoceptive awareness. You're starting to strengthen this communication with your body. And if we can do that, we can pull that into the other situations where we're feeling dysregulated. So for that woman in the meditation class, for example, she could bring some of those tools to help herself say, like, hey, I am, you know, opening the eyes, noticing the teacher, looking around the room and saying, hey, this is the present moment. And in this present moment, right now, I'm safe. And I know the word safe is a triggering word, but it's also something we need to explore, because if we can't establish safety and understand that there are moments that are safe, how do we heal from those traumatic memories where we didn't feel that?
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, I hear this and, you know, we started talking about neurodivergence, and it just kind of reminds me, you know, watching my sons, you know, through their lives, when, of course, with autism, being triggered by external stimuli can set someone off with autism. I'm always amazed. I always kind of explain it as, you know, especially when they're younger, as they age, they seem to kind of grow out of some of those sensory things as they become, you know, the healthier they become in understanding and balancing those needs, but their senses are on overload, you know,
all the time.
And so I remember one time my oldest son, he's sitting watching a show, we had people over, there was a radio on, and he started signing plane to me, like looking up and signing plane, and there's no plane on the TV. And I'm like, what's going on? And then so I turn off the radio, and because there's a group of people in the house, and then I ask them to be quiet, I turn off this TV, then I go outside, and I could hear the plane coming towards us several kilometers away. And I'm just, that just blew my mind, and, you know, helping me understand why, you know, kids with autism, head muff, like ear muffs, you know, sometimes there's like body wraps you put on them. One of my sons used to love to being in the bottom of a sleeping bag and dragged around, you know, like all these crazy things to bring them back into their bodies, and kind of, I need to distract myself with another scent, like sense. The hearing's too much, so I need to block that off and feel more. You know, they have their fidget toys, all these things that help. It seems to kind of bring them back into the body. You know, I remember someone saying a comment about it. You know, if you go into like a supply shop for, you know, autism or neurodivergence, it's no difference than walking into an S&M shop. It's just everything there is black and leather, but with the kids' ones, it's all bright and colorful. But it's the same process. And it just fascinates me. I remember reading a study about first responders after 9/11 and how within, they contacted a whole bunch of them or following them, and a very large percentage of these first responders to cope and to treat were going to, either S&M clubs or were seeking out the assistance of a dominatrix. And I know this is a little weird, but I still think it's on topic. It's we go to these things. We need, you know, these are all tools to bring us into the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yoga is not S&M, but sometimes a class can feel that way.
Depending on the teacher. I've had teachers that have that dominatrix energy for sure. I tend to avoid them. But, you know, and you can come into my space and everything's cream, you know, in earth tones.
Uh-huh.
But it's the sensory. It's, you know, the body's the body. I say this to people all the time. You know, the body is the body. The pathways in which the body works are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're all looking for ways to connect with the body. And sometimes our sensory system is screaming. and sometimes it's numb and it's like we can't feel at all and we're trying to find a way to stimulate the senses. And but it's that's what brings us back into the present moment. And I can see where it maybe would to some people feel a little strange to bring S&M into the conversation, but isn't it similar? Because it is. The body is the body. And for an adult who perhaps found themselves in a trauma pattern after 9/11, they wouldn't have had any, this is a new experience for them, they were looking for sensory input, right? Like pain makes you feel your body and it brings you into the present moment hard and fast. And it's similar, you know, when a child or an adult, because I work with a lot of neurodivergent adults, like I use sandbags to place on the body to provide pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I do head wrap, you know, when, so it's a gentle towel. We bring motion to the neck and we wrap around the ears gently and over the eyes and reducing the sensory. So I definitely dance in that world. It's like leaning into sensation and dancing out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been training other practitioners since 2007. And I just finished a training on Friday, so this is really fresh in my mind. But, you know, the big things that people who are doing this work, whether it's, you know, what I do, which is more somatic therapy, embodiment yoga therapy, or anything body-based, there's really only so many things that we do, right? Like, and so the big things are we're inviting people to remember their agency. We give them choice and options. And those options are, there's not that many. It's like, in this moment, do you need stillness?
Mm-hmm.
In this moment, do you need movement? In this moment, do you need sensation? And I have clients who are neurotypical. I'm not one to segregate and then separate everyone. I support who I support. I think a lot of the people I'm working with recognize they're not in their bodies and they feel that that's where they need to do the work.
I think treating everyone as though they're neurodivergent is perfect. I always said everyone needs to raise their kids as though they have autism.
You know, I've recently applied for grad school in social work because it's so paralleled with what I do. And interestingly, one of my main reasons is I want to advocate for the neurodivergent community. So I love that you've brought this into the conversation. Because I feel that, you know, especially in the case of autism, the whole process has been shaped and framed from a colonialized, I'm going to bring in some big words now, neurotypical viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen in my own little is when my needs were met and when I was given the opportunity to do things a little more slowly in a quiet way. Wow, holy smokes. I've got a really brilliant mind and I'm accomplished and I've helped all these people. And if you were to put me in a box, diagnostic-wise, you would see words that are uncomfortable, like disability and all these things. And I'm anything but. I am a very capable adult as long as my needs are met. And, I'm accommodated on occasion so that I can do things in a way that lets it make sense to me, you know, and we wouldn't ask that of anyone else. And anyway, what I wanted to respond to is that's one of the things that I really would love to see is instead of othering people who are neurodivergent and autistic and pulling them out of school and you know, doing all these things that create separateness, wouldn't it make sense to just frame our shared space in a way that is supportive for neurodivergent individuals, and then neurotypical people would benefit from that? Because what I've seen, I have people who 100% are neurotypical. I treat them the same, give them the same support as my neurodivergent clients. And guess what? They benefit from it because everyone needs to slow down, reduce the sensory input, work within their capacity. Everyone has the same needs. It's just unique how it comes out. That's all. It's just a little different in terms of the amount. But I would love to see spaces that are more neurodivergent centered, and then everyone's welcome, and then everyone would benefit, because really, I think that the world as it is right now isn't healthy for anyone. And that's what I'm seeing. And I wouldn't be as busy as I am. I mean, you saw how hard it was to get our appointment scheduled. Yeah. I wouldn't be as busy as I am if our world wasn't struggling. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's right. And I'm sure you'd say the same in your practice. Like,
oh, yeah. You know, it's unfortunate, you know, when you see how the, you know, main healthcare system is struggling. You know, I wouldn't lie and say it doesn't benefit me, but it's sad that, you know, because people can't get the help they need, they come to me with such severe things, and you know, you wish the system prevented things and talked about, you know, what we're talking about, and had a much more holistic approach to wellness. We've obviously learned that we cannot afford to run the model the way it is. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And until we have, you know, politicians that are either brave enough or enough within the field with the knowledge and skills like what you're planning, you know, through a master's degree, you're going to be able to expose the system to much different approaches. And we've seen this continually through the last few years. We've seen how policing needs to change with a better approach to mental health. We have, you know, a very open and frank discussion on how systematic racism is in every system within Canada, because if a system is more than, you know, 5 years old, there's a good chance it has those, you know, underlining issues of colonialism and, you know, white male dominated world. It's there. And the more honest
it
and
is
open we are.
And yes.
Go ahead. Yeah. You know, then if we're honest about it, then
I'm just like, yes.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I honestly, like, you should have read my grad application. Like, you right on par with where my thoughts are. It's the system. The system is struggling, and the people who are dedicating their lives in the system, oh gosh, these folks have done so much, and they haven't been given, and really the respect and the care that they deserve.
Exactly.
You know, these are people helping people, and yes, gosh, I know there's so much I could go off on. We'll have to talk again.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. We'll have to plan another time to talk about your thesis and what you're planning for your master's. I'd love it.
Yeah, I would love that. But it really is, we need to lean into decolonization. Mm-hmm. How do we dismantle these systems of oppression? And how do we recenter things? because that's really, I think, one of the core issues, and we could pull in a lot more. My undergrad was in cultural studies, so I could say, well, let's talk about industrialization and how that impacted how humans were no longer, that was really huge, that played into it, right? Because it was the shifting of the perception of time. Prior to that, there was no concept of productivity. Mm-hmm. Industrialization brought in this idea that you need to be productive all the time.
Yes.
It's about time now. You have to be productive. You have to be producing. You have to be getting things done. And that's one of the biggest issues that comes up. I mean, I'm training a group of yoga therapists right now. We were just in class last night. And this is exactly what we're talking about. And these are people who support people. And we were talking about, you know, what's your resistance to self-care? What's your resistance to taking time for yourself and doing what you need? And myself included, I was in the conversation as a vulnerable soul sharing my own struggles. I wasn't there sitting like I'd figured it out. But and that's what came up is worthiness. Mm. I feel like I have to accomplish this, this, and this before I'm allowed to go take care of myself.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's part of colonization too, right? Like there was really a whitewashing of all these beautiful practices that were more feminine led, that said, you know, what are you feeling? What are you needing? Let's take our time. Let's go down. All of that. So, you know, the answers are really like how do we repattern this whole system? Mm-hmm. How do we dismantle these things that are still oppressive? And, you know, if we bring that back to neurodivergence, 100%, I believe that the way that we look at neurodivergence, the way it's diagnosed, all of it, that there's definitely a layer to it that stems from colonization, and we need to decolonize that too.
Oh. That's beautiful. Okay, I need to direct us to a couple things before we finish because I've already taken a lot of your time. This stuff is fascinating, so we'll have to put a pen in it.
It is. And come back. It's been wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, this past weekend, you assisted or you were part of the mini retreat with Foothills Wellness Center. And I hear it sold out, and it was just amazing. Can you share a few thoughts about that?
Yes, it's so wonderful. So I was honored to be there with Samantha Baldwin and Lisa, the owner of Foothills Wellness Retreat. And what a beautiful group of women who showed up willing to take that time. You know, like we were just saying, you know, we often don't make that time for ourselves because we're struggling with worthiness. These individuals showed up and made the time on a Sunday afternoon. So, I mean, I want to applaud the other practitioners who were there. Samantha provided a beautiful sound healing session. Lisa facilitated a yoga nidra, which is a meditation that allows you to go into your place of knowing. In yoga, we call this the heart center or chitta, where you store all of your stuff, the things that need to be released, and it gives you opportunity to let that go and move it out. And it's very gentle. She teaches it in a trauma-informed, accessible way. So applaud the practitioners who showed up. And I really want to emphasize the individuals who came. It's about them. Like, they did the work. They took the time and they drove there. There were people from Calgary that went all the way down to Okotoks for this, and they took the time to say, I am worthy and I deserve this and my care is important, and I know that getting into my body right now is important because this is the space where I'm holding all my trauma and all my stuck emotions, and I'm going to be gentle with myself. I'm going to start this process of moving, even though it's a little uncomfortable, and leaning in. And, you know, for my own part, I was like the little middle person there that facilitated, did a very gentle movement practice. A lot of what I do is more about functional movement. There were people who attended who weren't I would say, whose bodies would not have appreciated a lot of traditional yoga practices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was an accessible experience. We did a lot of things from a standing orientation with this gentle, tiny micro movements. And then we made our way down to the floor where we had a little nest and we did a beautiful resting time and a meditation. It was a phenomenal experience. And, you know, I'll always speak about Lisa's work and what she's doing with Foothills Wellness Retreat. She's filling a need. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. Will we get a chance to see you at the winter retreat? Have you talked to Lisa? Are you involved with that one?
You know, my schedule is a bit tricky. But when I come, I can. And I always support Lisa's work. And I show up when I'm able. I know she and I have some things on the docket for the future that we're already discussing. Can you remind me the winter retreat? When is that?
So that's February 3rd to 5th. It's a Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yes. So I don't know that I'm making an appearance at that one, but I will be helping to promote it most certainly. Because I know that at the last retreat, one of my graduates was actually there. So I do send people that I've trained as well. And they're just as fabulous as I am, if not more, in their own respect. So I know at the last retreat that Catherine Capen was there and she was facilitating embodiment yoga therapy with people one-on-one during that. So there's always going to be an embodiment presence there.
Oh, excellent.
Wonderful.
Well, after hearing this discussion we've had, I'm sure there's people listening that want to find you online or get in contact, take class or take a training. I will leave all the links, in the description here. But what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
The best way would be to go to my website, and that's mandorlayoga.com. Or you could find me on Instagram, and that's at Mandorla Yoga. And that's spelled Mandorla Yoga.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure I can get as much information as I can in the description so people can find you. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
I apologize.
This was wonderful. That's okay. I had already explained to my next session that I'm doing that I might be a touch late, so all good.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope we can talk more. I think we have a few things to discuss.
You know, I will send you an email. I have we have a podcast for my clinic called The Five Elements of Letting Go, and it's mm-hmm. where I think it's about 30 some people I've interviewed in the community where we just talk about, you know, their own mental health, the tools and techniques they use to find peace, and, you know, just, and these are just everyday people. And so mm-hmm. Maybe I'll contact you and then we can have a little longer discussion someday about this. I'd love it.
That would be wonderful. I look forward to unpacking some of these things more.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. We all really appreciate it.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much. I enjoyed the conversation. Have a lovely day. Mm-hmm.